Hey, everybody. This is Karen.
This is Mary.
And we're just geeking out on local history and history spinners.
History spinners.
We're back after our summer vacation.
Sure. That's what we're calling it. And I'm sticking to it.
Because Mary's been doing a lot of research and she just kept going down little research rabbit holes. For Mrs. Amy.
Mrs. Lenora Amy.
So we're talking about Mrs. Amy today.
Yes.
Give us a little background on her and her business stuff. We're looking into women in early Council Bluffs history because we're finding some fascinating souls.
Some very interesting characters. Lenora Scott Amy was born in 1814 in Woodstock, Vermont. And in 1829, she married Dustin Amy, and she was about 15 years old. And I think pretty much her and Dustin were on the move after that in because their first child, Frances, was born in Ohio in 1831.
So she was 18 then.
No, wait, take that back. I already made a mistake. She was born in New York. Frances, the first child, a daughter, was born in New York State.
And you need to write this down because this history, boy, in the second half
of the show,
wow,
it's like we should have flow. I tried to make a flow chart and I failed. But hopefully we can make this clear as mud. Their second child, Royal, a son, and their only son, was born in Ohio. And a couple of years later, Ellen, their third child, was born in Ohio as well. And then Mary Amy was born in Nebraska Territory. So we know by 1848, they're in this part of the country. They're in Nebraska Territory.
With four children?
Yes, at that point, there's four children. There's one more to come. I'm pretty sure they came west with the Mormons, the Church of Latter-day Saints. I know Dustin was a member. I'm not sure how many wives he had. I'm trying to figure that out, but I know for sure he had two. He married Lenora in 1829, like I said. And by 1848, they're in Nebraska Territory. And Levira Clark Smith is also in Nebraska Territory. And I know she is Dustin's second wife. And by 1850, Dustin and Lenora and the four kids are now living in Canesville, which is becomes Council Bluffs.
And the plot thickens.
And the plot thickens. But so by 1851, they have another child. Dustin and Lenora have, who's the last one? Sarah. And she was born in 1851, which is the same year that Dustin Amy left for Salt Lake City with his second wife, Levira. So he basically left either Lenora pregnant or with a newborn. And
what a guy.
Yeah, nice guy.
What a guy. And we don't know exactly why he left other than... Maybe he felt the call to move west.
Well, let's see here. Well, I was going to say maybe Levira was younger, but no, she was about the same age as Lenora.
Interesting. We'll never know. I really wish we had a diary of Lenora.
Or Dustin.
Levira.
So Dustin heads west to Salt Lake City, leaves Lenora here with the kids. He does have a child with Levira. Oscar Amy is his son by his second wife. Put a pin in that.
Oscar.
We'll come back to him later. But I just wanted to get you all like to Council Bluffs. So yes. Now we're in Council Bluffs. It's 1856. And at that point, I think it's interesting too, in the 1856 state census, she says she's widowed. But I think everybody knows.
Of course. We looked up at the population of Council Bluffs then was, you know, 2,400 or 2,500 maybe. So everybody knows everybody.
Everybody knows, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And by 1856, her two eldest children are married and out of the house. And so she's got three daughters left at home. And whether or not Dustin left her with money, she had her own money, but she started buying property. And the first, we have the indexes on microfilm at the library, and but we don't have the records necessarily for all of them. So I know she was buying property in 1854, 1855. Overall, the ones that I know of, so there was at least probably 60 transactions buying and selling in her lifetime, which,
wow.
Yeah, hopefully it was easier then than it is now. I couldn't imagine having to.
Right. For a single woman at the time, which women could always own property in Iowa and the territory,
yes.
But that's still a lot of transactions for anybody.
Yeah. And these are just the ones that I know about, because I know she bought land over in Florence. So she had land in Nebraska, and there may have been transactions that I missed or didn't find. So, and she bought land basically all over the place. Some of the main stuff, she had the lots that were just south of where the Broadway Methodist Church is now. And she actually owned a chunk of Pierce Street. And I think people were using that as a street. So obviously there wasn't anything on there, but she still owned it. And the city needed to, there was an article where they needed to, you know, talk to her about buying that chunk of land where Pierce Street runs through. And I think Mrs. Minster, Maria Minster, also owned a chunk of Pierce Street as well. So
you wonder what these two women, if they knew each other well,
they know each other, but yeah. Well, I don't know.
Were they that's in competition? Were they friendly competition?
I don't know.
That's a whole other podcast.
She also bought and sold land with her daughter, Frances, the oldest. Which I just think was interesting. I counted there was between family members, either buying and selling, there's 6 or 7 transactions. And even, you know, I mentioned one time her and her daughter basically were swapping lots. They were selling each other lots, but they put a price of $8,000 on it. And I'm like, I don't know why they just didn't.
Right.
Like a dollar. Why? What was the significance of that $8,000? So she owned those lots south of the Broadway Methodist. She owned land around Broadway and Main Street. She owned a big chunk on South First Street. She had stuff over what is now underneath the viaduct. Kind of 12th and Broadway.
She had quite a bit along Pearl Street and
Maine, right? Pearl Street. And then she also, there is that section in on South Main and South Pearl where they meet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that little V.
In Haymarket, yeah.
In the Haymarket, she owned that little triangle.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
So a little bit, and some of this land she would own. I tried to figure out. Now, this is as Karen mentioned earlier, it was the real estate stuff that I started digging into. And I felt like digging into it even more. But
Every week she said to me, I've got to stop.
Just to find out how much she paid and, you know, how much she made on some of this stuff. But the early stuff is missing. We have probably the deeds, the actual records from like 1863 or on. So the early 1854 stuff, because some of this stuff she bought like in May of 1854, and then she turned around and sold it in July. There's another lot she bought in May of 1856 and turned around and sold it in August. Other things she hung on to for a while. And here, another thing that I was going to investigate and I stopped. But I know there was in 1858 a bit of a depression or recession in the country. Mm-hmm. And this has come up in other people that I've researched. And specifically a place in Nebraska called Streeterville, which is, I won't go in. But it was basically on the west side of Carter Lake, mm-hmm. before it was Carter Lake, when it was still in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And 18, there was a crash or something. And so I noticed that too in her purchasing. She quits buying by 1858, and it takes up maybe 10 years before she starts buying again. And that's when she also starts selling again. So I'm wondering.
Business slowdown.
And, you know, maybe she wasn't going to get the prices that she wanted. And so it was better, like my mom always says, they're not making any more of it. So you hang on to it. Mm-hmm. And she's probably drawing rents on this. We think of this as just property when you think, oh, it's just a lot, but there's a building on that lot.
Right.
And people, and so she's probably getting rents no matter what there is on that. So, what else was there? Oh, there was also an interesting purchase from the city. I would see her. She had an interest. I don't know. I'd like to see her relation, a little glimpses of her relationship with the city, because she tended to own property that the city wanted, like Pierce Street.
Yeah.
Or they wanted to widen the street. There was another place up on Bryant, and she said, oh, I'll sell it to you, but it's like $100 a foot or something outrageous. And then there was on Main Street, they needed to widen Main Street to 66 feet. And so they just wanted so much of her lot that would get them to 60. She said, well, I'll sell you that for $1. And it was, the city had to build a boardwalk in front of her business on her lot. It was 183 feet long and 8 feet wide.
Wow.
In the part on South Main.
183 feet long.
183 feet long. So you can imagine the expense. Can you imagine of like telling the city, yeah, I'll sell this to $1, but put in a, you know, big long sidewalk for me.
They're stuck.
Because they need that. She's got them over a barrel.
She was nobody's fool.
No. And there was later on in the 1890s, she did go to the city and say, and she was arguing about the valuation of her property. She thought it was too high, or she thought it was wrong. And the city goes, yes, you're right. It should be more. Oops. And they doubled it to $1,000. And I think because she was arguing about the property tax and all that. Uh-huh. So it
was not a friendly, cozy relationship with the city.
No. And that makes you think about her personality. I don't know. Or, I mean, which we'll get into maybe in the second half. But,
She had to be a tough woman. I mean, she's raising these five kids
on her own, and her husband
took off with somebody else, and everyone knows it.
And what was she started? She started buying in 1854, and basically, I think for her, 1889 is kind of when she quit selling, and that's the last time I could find that she actually sold a piece of property. And I think whether or not her daughter and son and in-laws and probably were still buying and selling, but that's another.
Do we know what Dustin did for a living?
Dustin was a tinsmith as well.
Okay.
And he took that business with him out to Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And so he was also buying land out there. And he came back here for a bit, which we'll get into the second half. But his name then showed up when he was back. It would be Dustin and L.S. Amy. So husband and wife were buying together. But then I think the Sun Royal took over. He had a tinsmith business here in Council Bluffs as well. So
a fun little story there, too. We'll get there.
We'll get there. But that's... that's about all I have for the transactions. I can't think of looking through my notes. It's all, it's, it tells a story, but you don't know kind of what that story is. So, but like you said, you think about it, what, without having that business sense, that was probably the one thing that, women could do. And she's not the only one. I think I see that other women have their name on property. And she also owned land in Harrison County and Monona County, 160 acres or so, that when that all opened up. And I've noticed that too, of other women buying. It might have been cheap. I don't know how much she paid for that stuff, but
it's an income
and investment, you know.
Right.
So,
and when you got five kids.
And you got five kids, so
yeah.
Yeah, buying and selling. So I don't know if we want to take a little break.
We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with Family Matters.
Get your flow charts. Get your pencils.
Get your little
diagrams
ancestral ready. Charts out. And we're back. We had a little snack.
Yep.
Gathered some thoughts.
Yes. This is the point where we asked for the ancestry chart, sort of charts to
this,
get.
This is Lenora's family.
Lenora's family. Karen and I were talking earlier, you think you're going to go into something thinking, oh, this would be a straightforward kind of classic early citizen. But this.
Make a little post on Facebook. Call it day.
You can't separate Lenora from her family. And we're not talking the Waltons here. This is more more the Ewings. You know, we're probably dating myself by, I can't think of a modern, maybe Empire.
Except nobody shot Destiny.
No, that we know of. The one thing I found interesting when I was researching Lenore is you don't see her in the society pages in the newspaper. Normally some of these women, it'll either be church social or a women's group or some committee. But the only time I really saw her in the newspaper was either through, land transactions or in city council notes. You know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, they wanted a piece of the land and, you know, and, you know, Dexter Bloomer had to get involved at one point talking to her about stuff. So, oh, to be a fly on the wall.
Was that when he was mayor?
I don't know.
Or on the council.
See, now you're asking me questions.
I'm sorry.
If I had another few months,
we could do it.
I could answer all these questions.
But we're going to do that book about women in early council blocks.
Sure. Yes.
It'll be the ancestry chart and Dexter Bloomer. Amelia's husband, by the way.
Yes. But she was a business and it was family. So as we mentioned, by 1851, Dustin took off to Salt Lake City. And by 1856 in the census, her two oldest children, Royal Amy and Frances, were married. So she had the three girls.
Not to each other.
Not to each other. No, not that kind
of family. That didn't happen in this family.
Not in this family. but Frances married a, oddly enough, a man by J.R. Dye. and Royal married a woman named Mary, who the same name as his sister, which I hate it when they do that because you get all confused. And Royal was in the tinsmith, stoves, tins, home goods, that sort of thing. So the family was in business and Frances was buying and selling. For some reason, and Karen and I were discussing this, in 1863, Lenora goes to Salt Lake City and remarries Dustin and brings him back to Council Bluffs.
And we have no idea why.
We don't know why. And they say they remarried. Maybe they remarried in Salt Lake City, and I just don't have documentation. Of course, I never had any documentation that they divorced. So they, for all intents and purposes, they were husband and wife again.
She was widowed, so he came back to life, apparently, in Salt Lake.
Yes. Well, I've seen that once in a while. I was told, Karen, in 1856, in the 1856 state census, she's listed herself as widowed, but she's divorced. And I've seen that a few other women did that. It's like, no, you're not. But maybe they just didn't have a code for door.
I don't know.
But nevertheless.
So Dustin's back.
Dustin's back, but he's not back for very long. Poor Dustin, who is probably a good 10 years older than Lenora, passes away in 1868.
And Levira didn't come back with
him. No, Levira and Oscar, their son, stayed in Salt Lake City.
All right. Oscar died.
And Oscar.
Sorry, I interrupted your train of thought.
Now, see, now you're going to get everybody confused.
Oh,
that's later.
Not Oscar. Not Oscar. Dustin.
Died. Dustin died. Dustin died in 18. And it was funny, in a few years later, she must have gotten some money. In 1874, so a good few years after he died, she had a Scotch granite marker put on his grave, and it cost $600.
And in Fairview?
Yep.
In Fairview? There, okay.
Up there in Fairview. Things also got interesting for the two oldest. For Frances, her husband, she and her husband had a son, Harry. And at some point, according to an article, I think in either the Omaha Bee or the World Herald, J.R. Dye went off to join the Mormon army, as they put it, which I'm assuming is sort of the Mormon mission that they do. He left and never came back.
Okay.
So whether he died on that trip or just never came back.
J.R. died.
But we're assuming at some point he died. So. And for Royal, in the mid-1870s, he and his wife divorced. And there is some speculation that the last child that he and his wife had together may not have been his.
Okay.
I don't know. It was just a gut feeling when I did a little research on Royal about a year ago. And it was just one of those, as you're reading through it, you're like, And somebody on Ancestry had the same suspicion as well, because they refer to that last child as sort of a half sibling to everybody else. So can't prove it. I don't know.
Did Mary remarry? As in maybe the father of this child?
No, okay. I don't think so, because she remarried later on.
Okay.
But we can't go that way, Karen.
No, because
You're taking us off on Avenue, and we're going to get in a cul-de-sac.
This is what happens, and we're never going to find librarians doing this stuff. Yeah,
because this is what happened with this family. But Frances, the oldest daughter, she did remarry. A man named Isaac Jackson. Royal, he remarried. Both he and his wife did eventually remarry. And but the rest of the kids too got Ellen, Mary, and Sarah. They all got married and stayed married and had kids.
We have to talk about Mary and her business that's a block away from her ex-husband's. I love that.
Well, yeah, Royal, as we said, was in the tinsmith business. And I think he brought his sons as well into the business. When they divorced, he had a business, what did we say, like the 600 block of South Main.
Right.
And his wife,
ex-wife.
His ex-wife and son had a business, same kind of business, on the 500 block. South
Which Maine. I just love, because if you're looking for tin coming off of Broadway, you're going to hit hers first.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, that was a whole interesting little relationship, too. And we could probably talk about her, but it's...
We're moving on.
We're pulling it back and sticking to the sibling. So we're into the 1870s. Everybody's kind of settled down. And it's really kind of by the 1880s, I think things really start to get interesting, because by the 1880 census, everybody's back home with mom, just about. My little pages here, because we've got Royal, who in 1880, Lenore Amy is now 66 years old. Royal Amy, her son, is 46. He's divorced and living home with mom. Frances and Isaac, her eldest daughter and her new husband and her son from her first marriage, are living with mom. And Ellen, who is 38, another daughter, is living home with mom, who's widowed. Ellen is now widowed.
Are we sure she was actually widowed? Take off her points west.
Too. I meant it too. I can't find anything about Ellen. I don't know who she married. I don't know what happened to Ellen, but I know in 1880, she was living home with mom with her two sons.
Okay.
So yeah, it just back
families.
Home. Family.
What are you going to do?
where do we get?
We were commenting that our families are actually kind of boring.
Boring.
Compared to, thankfully.
Thankfully. In the 1880s, she does, she gets in trouble because one of the buildings that she owns apparently has a saloon in it, and it's selling whiskey when it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And I think the case against her was dismissed because she claims she didn't know. I didn't know anything about her, whoever tenant was doing it, but I'm like, okay. Also, her daughter, I believe, Mary, her husband is living out in Colorado. So there is a bit of society showing up where, you know, people are coming to visit, Lenora's going out to visit, and we get into the 1890s. In 1892, there's an article in the paper where Lenora goes to Salt Lake City to visit friends. But she's not. Well, maybe she is.
Maybe not Elvira, but, you know.
She is, because at this point, 1892, Elvira has passed on. Elvira, she died in 1883. And she had property that Dustin had given her when he left. And when Elvira died, she gave that money or that property to Oscar.
Their son.
And unfortunately, Oscar died in, I think it was, did Oscar die? Oscar died in 1891.
Okay. And she's going back in 1892?
Yeah. Because what happened now? We're going to travel west. Now the drama heads west to Utah. And Oscar Amy dies. He has relatively young man. He's like 38. And he leaves a widow. So Jenny. And Jenny says, okay, great. The estate's mine. Well, some folks come along and said, you never got divorced from your first husband. So many marriages. And, you know.
Some of them at the same time.
Yeah. And so they said, no, you didn't properly get divorced from your first husband. The estate's not yours. So this isn't, your marriage to Oscar was never legal. And at this point, three maternal aunts show up of Oscar's. And they said, no, the estate's ours. It belongs to us. Well, not to be outdone, Royal Amy and Grew and his siblings said, no, the estate belongs to us because we're half siblings. Now, this made huge news in Salt Lake City. There's a newspaper. It's like literally front page news. The Amy case, it's called. And it goes into great detail of why Jenny's the divorce never went through. Lenora came out to testify to say that, yes, you know, Dustin came here, married her, had the son, and I came back and got him, went through all of that business. And ultimately what happened is this court decided, well, nope, Jenny was never divorced from her first husband. So, and they gave that estate to the maternal aunts. Well, Jenny appeals. And there is case law. It went to the Utah Supreme Court, and I actually found the case. It's online somewhere, and I thought, I didn't read it, because I'm not going to. And they said, no, she was properly divorced, and they overturned the lower court's ruling and gave that estate to Jenny, the wife. And so this was like 1901. That it was finally decided.
It's a while.
And at that point, once it's all settled, Jenny came after Royal and siblings and said, you owe me $982 for court costs.
Which isn't insignificant in 1900.
So whether or not she got that money, I don't know. But that bit showed up in the Omaha Bee, I think, that article. So that was all settled. And maybe it was all just too much for Lenora. We don't know. Because at that point, in 1898, or no, actually 1897, Royal petitions to be appointed Lenora's guardian. She's in ill health. Maybe strokes. And so basically Royal becomes her guardian. But Lenora is still living in her own house. And her grandson, Harry, is, I think at this point now close to 40, is living with her. And Frances, who is Frances Dye Jackson, she died 1897, so like about the same year. So now Harry has also, he's inherited his mother's estate.
And is
living with grandma, and I suspect he may have a drinking problem. I don't know. So that's kind of where we stand. So Royal's kind of taking care of things. He's collecting rents, paying taxes, you know, paying bits and sundries, the subscription to the World Herald, as we discovered, buckets and, you know, basic household stuff that you're running the household. Let's see. In January of 1899, she's not well. She's failing health. They don't expect she has long to live. There's an article here. It's January 8th, 1899. Is Ellis Amy suffering from an attack of apoplexy?
Apoplexy.
Thank you. And death is hourly expected.
Wow.
Until March. March 5th is when she dies. Wow. So, that tells you maybe I'm not dead yet. And this is when it gets really interesting. And
hasn't been dull yet.
It hasn't been dull. Do you learn something about what Lenora has instilled in her children, or what she believed herself? Was it money, power, money?
Money.
So in March of 6th, 1899, they have Lenora's funeral. And on March 9th, they can't find her will. And so it appeared in the paper on March 9th saying we can't find. So that tells you they're looking for that. That's 4 days after she died. So they're pretty much looking.
And they assumed there was a will, or they knew?
They knew there was a will.
Okay.
Because they found the receipt for the visit to the lawyer. And the lawyer remembers making out a will, but he didn't have a copy of it.
Interesting. So, okay.
Where's the will? Mm-hmm. So of course it goes into probate. March 9th, the Mrs. Amy's will is missing. And then at that point it goes to probate. And in May of 1899, the estate files, so the rest of the siblings, I'm assuming, file an objection to a bill that Royal has submitted to, how do they put it? The ministers of the estate files objection to report of R.D. Amy guardian. And what that report is he wants like $2,000 for all of the stuff that he paid for over the last few years for his mother. It's like, and I think we looked it up and it was like that 2000 and some is about like $67,000 today. And
he itemized it.
He itemized everything. Like the woman to iron, the bucket, a new flu, something meat. For the screen door, right. Meat, the World Herald. I mean, everything. Whiskey. He bought his mom some whiskey.
Or maybe it was Harry that was drinking.
Well, I don't know. But it said whiskey for mom. It made his point of saying that. And it's like, you can't even buy your mom a little whiskey. And you need to get money back. But anyway, so that's like, So they filed an objection to that. But then at the same time, so this was in May, in July of that 1899, Harry Dye, the grandson, is charged with insanity. And they says, he'd been living with Lerm. And he is then, has a guardian appointed. Forrest Smith is appointed his guardian, and he's taken to Clarinda. So not sure why he's insane, what kind of insanity. He claims this whole time that they're just after his money.
Which is, possible with this family.
So he's off to Clarinda, and I'm not quite sure how long did. Well, and Harry lived till 1912, so he was around for another.
Wow. Still at 10 Clarinda, years. Do we know?
I don't know. I had to stop at some point.
I know. I keep trying to drag her down another rabbit hole.
And then Mary Amy, now this is Mary Amy Haynes, Lenora's daughter. She is granted $35 for taking care of her mom in the last few years of her life, but she wanted $600. But they only gave her $35. The same with Royal. They settled that guardianship of his mother. They actually charged him $250, but he got to keep the life insurance policy he had out on his mother, which I thought was
interesting.
And then by April of 1900, they wanted the estate sued. They wanted this settled. Let's settle the estate. And before the estate was fully dispersed and settled, George Haynes had a fist fight with his nephew in a lawyer's office.
You can't make this stuff up.
No, and I think didn't quite say why they came to blows, but I think George, the elder George, got the worst of it by his nephew. Punched in the nose. And then I think... another woman, I think George's, the grandson's wife, I don't know, I'm still confused myself. She got knocked down in the scuffle as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, finally in June of 1900, I think the final piece of the estate was a building on Broadway, was sold for $12,000. And
that's a lot of money then.
Yeah. And the estate is finally settled up, and it only produced $25,000, which was less than expected.
Oh, well.
And that's basically where the story ends, even
lots of little tentacles you could
little
follow.
Little tentacles you could go on because, you know, Royal, yeah, his ex-wife and Harry Dye, was he insane? Did he live out the rest of his life in Clarinda? I don't know. And what happened to Ellen Smith? I don't know what happened to her.
And J.R.
The J.R., what happened to J.R.? Ellen Amy Smith, I don't know who she married. I don't know when she died. I know one of her sons, Albert, I believe was a doctor. I could figure out when he died. There was also another neat little piece was, there was an article in the paper where Mary Haynes, Lenora's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now pay attention.
All right. Lenora's daughter.
Mary. There's a Mary.
Not Royal's wife.
No. So Mary receives notice that her cousin in Chicago has passed away. Sad news, cousin died. And this cousin is also the mother-in-law of her niece, Sabia Clark Strong.
I can't even.
I don't know what that would make. Yeah.
I don't know. Wow. Small world.
Small world. So
interesting family.
That's where we come to the end. Nice little obituary, nice little marker in Fairview Cemetery.
Have you seen it on Find a Grave?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's a nice little marker there. I think some of the
next to
the
Dustin. Kids.
Yep, because I think that was part of the
Scotch
marble marker she had placed on the, and she had a nice little write-up in the paper. I think Royal went on to be more of the prominent early citizen of Council Bluffs. You know, Mom may have got him started, but he was, again, the one that he was a member of the volunteer fire department. I think actually he was probably chief for a while. So yeah, and the business owner. So he was more in the society pages than his mother was. So, and I think that goes from there. But then there was also, you know, the divorce.
One wonders if Lenora chose to not be in the society pages or if she was shunned for one reason or another.
You know, that's, I've pondered that too. So whether it was shunned because, you know, I couldn't, and a part of me, I wonder if they really belong to a church.
Hmm.
Or if she went to church. Because like I said, most of the women, you'll see they're on a committee. Even during the Civil War, I didn't see her name like on a sanitary commission or, you know, some committee to a tea or benefit or something. And you'll see women, and it's at that point, 1860s, it's involved with the church. That's probably how you get part of the community. And then later on, probably in the 1890s, it's the women's clubs, you know, like garden club or history clubs or reading clubs or book clubs or whatever. And then they've got a club for everything.
Right. Which in Iowa, a lot of small libraries come from a women's club.
Exactly.
Library.
Yeah. And so, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe it could be, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe she just didn't have time for it. Maybe she wasn't of that class,
yeah.
You know? I don't know the fact that she was a woman doing it. But it would be interesting to see if we get into Mrs. Minster, because they were contemporaries. And there's a Minster Street.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's named after her or her husband, I'm assuming it's her.
But she did a lot of real estate.
She did a lot
well.
Of real estate. Same thing. I mean,
she might have done more than Mrs. Amy, actually. She had quite a lot.
Yeah.
She?
And I think she developed proper too. And so, yeah, but.
Well, we were talking that there wasn't a lot for women to do at
no,
that time other than. the real estate.
So. Yeah, because even to own a business, I think, would be tough. And that would have to be very specific to what kind of business you would own.
Mm-hmm.
Even Royal's ex-wife, well, she had that timber, but it was in association with her son.
Right.
So they ran it. So technically, if you're doing business, and especially something like that, to have a man around, you know, a woman's probably not going to have the same sort of clout. And,
yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Whereas you look at it, that's the one bit of power that Lenora probably had with the city is like, yeah, you're going to pay me for this. So why not? And Martha Stewart's probably, you know, the same thing.
Exactly.
You know, she went to jail for it at one point. But anyway.
I'm working on a project about Broadway from 1st to 8th Street and just pinning down what businesses were where and when in that,
yeah,
those 8 blocks. And in the process, I've been writing down when I find women who have businesses, and there are very few. There's a woman who's a photographer, a woman who is into electric medicine and gynecology, which makes me shudder. I'll see if I could figure out what that's about, but that's a little...
never mind.
And there are women who are in business with their husbands in a restaurant or something. But so far, I'm not finding a lot of women owning businesses themselves. And maybe next time we'll talk about Bell Clover and
her line of work.
Yes, that particular line of work. There are several.
Several
in that line of work. Again, interesting characters.
Yeah.
So it's interesting delving into women's lives there, but it's very difficult because history is written by men at that point, and so women just aren't really.
Yeah, you kind of have to either read between the lines and
piece things together from pages. It's which makes it interesting for people who love to do research, but it can also be very frustrating.
Very frustrating because
I want a diary.
I want more.
Yes.
I want more. I want, you know, a letter written home to mom or,
right. Or to the kids or anything. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe if you find some descendants in town, they would have something, but it's not very likely. And somebody like Lenora, she was so busy.
Yeah.
She probably just didn't sit down and write things down.
And then you have too, later on, Royal, even the family is trying to revise their history. You know, he starts talking about the good old days. At one point, he said that they came to Council Bluffs by riverboat and actually named the riverboat. And I don't think they did, because in another article, I think later, clarified that they came overland by wagon because they came west with the Mormons. Another, I think in his obituary, they claimed he came west with John A. Creighton. But that's not true, because John A. Creighton came through in 1856, and Royal, the Amys, had already been here 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they knew each other and paled around, but they didn't come out together. Yeah. And just the way, it almost seems he's trying to distance himself from his probably own little history, because he clearly remembered it. I mean, he was like 18,
mm-hmm.
you know, late teens when he came here. So he knew the story.
Interesting.
But
will we ever know what the real history is?
Nah,
probably not.
Probably not.
But it's fun to
sit and speculate.
Dive into it.
Yes.
As long as you can pull yourself out of all the rabbit holes.
Know. May go back in on some of them, but
yes, yes, I'm running into a bunch on the Broadway project too. So
yes,
so much to look at, but it's fun. So that's Lenora Amy.
That's
thanks for all that work. You did newspapers and ancestry and
it's fun. I like that stuff.
Yes,
I like it.
Yes, yes.
Looking through microfilm and then you're like little ah. Oh.
aha moments.
The aha moments. So it's like, wait a minute, she's selling stuff to, that's her daughter.
For $8,000. And they're just swapping it. What's that about?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I wonder if there was some kind of tax something going on there.
And that's what the other rabbit hole. I might go back in and we have the deeds from like 18, like I said, in the later 1860s, just because I want to know how much, I want to compare like when she bought something to selling to see what kind of money she made. Because some of that stuff, when she only had it for a couple of months, but she had to make money on it.
Yeah. What did she know was coming in? Martha Stewart and Insider Trading.
She saw an opening. So.
I don't know. I suspect she was a pretty shrewd woman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because she kept at it. It wasn't like this was like an early thing that most of her life she was buying, selling, and collecting rent.
Yep. You go, Lenora.
Go, Lenora.
All right. So when we come back, and who knows when that will be, because Belle Clover and...
Yes.
They're, boy, talk about rabbit holes.
I've got stuff on her, so it shouldn't be. I'm getting close.
We could have our Christmas vacation.
No, we might. I think we'll be back.
Yes. We have intermittent episodes. Irregularly
spaced.
We'll see.
We'll see. We just plan ahead. That's
okay. We're gonna do it in the next, I don't know.
Oh, either next month or after that.
Yeah.
I'll be ready.
We'll do it. Belle Clover.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.